Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 342 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Dunker Nation, let's ride. Nikias, a lot going on, man. We are recording before All-Star reserves are announced, so insert snub here, insert anger here, insert snark here. The day one of WNBA free agency has been fun.
Boy, has it.
So it's definitely time to hoop it up.
It is indeed time to hoop it up, and just as Steve alluded to, WNBA free agency has started. It's 4:40 Eastern right now, so about another 20 minutes to go of ESPN2's WNBA free agency special. So we are going to try to keep track of any signings that come in through the wire through the end of that show. We have a bunch in the dock, so we're going to have a lot of fun. I entered, you know, we finished a pod earlier in the week. Check that on YouTube if you haven't already. And I was like, you know, all right, cool. We're going to get some news items in on the NBA side. We're going to get some free agency noise on the W side. We're going to answer some questions from the mailbag. And then W news started rolling in, and it kept rolling in, and it kept rolling in, and it keeps rolling in. I was like, you know what? Let's just move the mailbag questions to next week. Continue to send those in, dunkerspot@yahoo.com. We got a whole lot of W stuff to talk about. First, very quickly on the NBA front, got a brief update on Julius Randle, who is out with a dislocated shoulder right now. He's set to be reevaluated in 2 to 3 weeks. Marc Gasol officially renounced his retirement, but we're not going to go too deep there. I don't know Steve wants to take his time with that one. We have a lot of W to get to, so tune in on Monday. Steve will give his full Marc Gasol thoughts there. I'll give the quick salute to the basketball legend. In terms of All-Star Weekend, we did get the Rising Stars Challenge rosters announced. Just very quickly on the rookies and the sophomores, Bilal Coulibaly, Keyonte George, Jordan Hawkins, Scoot Henderson, Chet Holmgren, Jaime Jaquez Jr., Derek Lively, Brandon Miller, Brandon Pajemski, Kayson Wallace, Victor Wembanyama for the rookies. Are you surprised, though, Asar Thompson or any other rookies? Are you surprised?
Can I be respectfully messy?
What you got?
Is the bit that they couldn't bring both Thompsons, so they didn't bring any Thompsons?
I mean, Asar has played more, and if he didn't just have that stretch in November, December, where he just was not in the rotation anymore, like I think he just gets in. I think that hit him. And I guess on that note, it is, while it stinks that Asar isn't in, and a man's been fun as he's gotten more playing time. I don't want to snub him. Nice that Kayson Wallace gets a shout and stuff like this. So like the per game numbers may not scream it, but he's been a really productive rookie on both ends of the floor for OKC. So I like that he's getting the nod. But that was the first name that popped for me. It was, he's not there. It's interesting. And as for the sophomores, and if you didn't know, with the rookies, alphabetical order with the last names. But with sophomores, Paolo Banchero, Dyson Daniels, Jalen Duren, Jaden Ivey, Walker Kessler, Benedict Mathurin, Keegan Murray, Shaden Sharp, Jabari Smith Jr., and Jalen Williams. Any surprises there?
No.
Okay.
You?
No, not really. Like, that seems like a pretty pretty strong list for me. So we will leave that there. Also, while we're on All-Star Weekend, we getting Steph versus Sabrina during the three-point contest? Are you excited? Or any early thoughts on that one?
It'll be interesting, especially after what Sabrina did last year. So I think it's fun. I just want to see what it looks like, honestly.
Yeah, that should be interesting. I wonder if they're doing this at the beginning of the competition, if it's going to be like a mid-round type, intermission type beat. I want to see how they schedule it, but that should be pretty fun. Let's dig in to W free agency because, buddy, I have been in a headlock all week. I have been in a headlock today specifically because once I think I have everything, whoop, here comes some contract details. Whoop, here comes another move. Whoop, here comes another trade. Here's some more rumors. I'm trying to react to things. I'm trying to check cap sheets and see who could do what, et cetera. It's a whirlwind, man. It is a freaking whirlwind. Let's start with the returns and then we'll dig into the actual movement. Oh, go ahead.
Wait. Can I raise my hand real quick before you dive into the complete whirlwind?
Yes. What you got?
Before you get annoyed, post-pod. Devin Booker and Donovan Mitchell were named the NBA Western and Eastern Conference Players of the Month, respectively, for games played in January. Tom Thibodeau and Tyronn Lue were named the NBA Western and Eastern Conference Coaches of the Month for games played in January.
Can I raise my hand very quickly?
What's up?
First and foremost, congrats, because those players and those coaches have done well. So I'm looking at the East, right? So we got Donovan Mitchell for player of the month in the East and Tibbs as the coach of the month.
Is this JB Bickerstaff praise or Jalen Brunson praise?
Yes.
Okay.
Because I figured it would be like one and the same if you're just going to go the Cleveland route, give it to the Cleveland folks because of what Cleveland's able to do, sans all the injuries and stuff. And if you were going to go the Knicks route, Jalen Brunson's right there. So it's interesting that it got like mixed that way. So again, not saying anyone got snubbed or anything like that, like very worthy winners. It's like, huh, it's interesting that it went that route with that. And then I think Victor Wembanyama, rookie of the month in the West. Did we see who was in the East? I know it isn't Jaime this week. I mean, this month.
I'm scrolling. It was Brandon Miller.
Oh, there we go. Who's been knocking down plenty of shots for Charlotte. One of the few bright spots in Charlotte right now. We won't hang there too long. Now, and also, thank you, Steve, for doing that, because you know I would have been upset if I didn't have that in there. That is how you know your personnel. Can you tell that he's a coach? Anyway, so on the return front, Satu Sabally, back with the Dallas Wings, most improved player, all WNBA, all-star, etc. 1 year, $195,000, slightly below the max figure, about $208,000 there. So interesting that she hits restricted free agency. We don't get the super long extension. We don't even get the two-year extension. It's just the one-year deal. So she can become an unrestricted free agent next year, but the Wings should be able to offer the core designation, which is basically W's version of the franchise tag for those who aren't super familiar. So not necessarily big, loud alarm bells for the Wings on that front, but something worth keeping an eye on. But an obvious move for Dallas Wings to make, get her back in the room for the year that she just had. Do you have any Satu thoughts or any thoughts on the deal itself?
Well, I had some overlapping thoughts before we dive in. And I go back to some of the discussions me and you have had. We've had with Mark Schindler, the great Mark Schindler. Mm-hmm. I'll send that invoice later. It's very interesting because it's been a fun day of free agency with returns, with trades, with new signings. And we've talked about how much patience can you have in this league? How much patience can you afford to have in this league? And the feeling of, can you bottom out? How long can you stay there? With the kinds of talents that are coming together, the depth of this league, the competitive level and nature of this league. I mean, the Aces are the Aces. Mm-hmm. The Liberty are desperately trying to track them down. Then you have other teams like the Wings, like the Dream, like the Sun, who are finding success and now trying to build on that so they can be in the upper echelon. You have teams that struggled trying to figure out, okay, how do we go up another run? Some teams are having to pivot. Like, as a team, maybe you know this year might not be your year, but you still have to make moves to build in a direction and have a vision for the future and now try and build on top of that, see what else you need. It's kind of interesting to see. It kind of feels like some teams bounce back and forth between different scenarios. Mm-hmm. Like, you look at what the Sky went through and the decisions they made. Once, you know, it became apparent that team was no longer going to stay together. Okay, we need to do something. We need to retool. We need to rebuild. Look what the Storm went through and how they had to take a second and be like, all right, what's our next move? You got teams like the Mystics and the Lynx trying to gauge their core, trying to compete. The Dream and Wings trying to build theirs up. It's fun. And also the Sun trying to maintain. So it's very good. I think for Satu, the biggest thing for me is it's huge for the Wings to have her come back, especially off a career year. Mm-hmm. And the larger thing for me is 1 year. So how much more noise can we make? What else can we build on what we did last year? As far as, you know, can we grow defensively, offensively? Can this pace and tempo continue to pay off? Can we have more movement? But either way, Satu is a massive part of that. And so we'll see what the Wings keep looking to add to make sure the unfinished business doesn't stay that way.
Yeah, like, again, noteworthy that not only was it a one-year deal that could get her to unrestricted free agency a little bit quicker or open up some sign and trade opportunities, as we'll talk about a little bit later in the show, but taking that one-year deal a little, you know, slightly under the max, said, you know, due to ESPN reporting, said that she took a little bit less to give the Wings the room to add some talent. I think it would make some sense to try to get some more shooting in the room, really space the floor for Satu, for Arike, for Tierra McCowan, Kalani Brown back. We talked about it a little bit on the last show. But we got some contract details there from Howard Megdahl of the Next. A 3-year deal for Kalani Brown. 3 years protected. Like, not only did she get the bag, $125K in year one, and that escalates moving forward. Fully protected deal. Like, she really proved a lot. And once the rumors came in that, hey, 5 or 6 different teams are excited, or interested, rather, it feels like the Wings said, okay, no, we can't do this. We can't let Kalani leave the building. We want to show her how much she's valued. So congratulations to Kalani Brown for getting that deal, getting that level of security. 2-year deal for Jonquel Jones in the Liberty, a 2-year protected deal per Jackie Powell of the Knicks. We don't have the terms on that yet, as the Liberty are still trying to make some things shake. But worth noting that Jonquel Jones will indeed be back.
Hey, let a naysayer know when we get those terms.
I would imagine we won't have that answer until we have another answer elsewhere, either complimentary or derogatory. Whenever that shoe drops, we will very quickly get, oh, Jonquel's making this. Stewie's making this. But anyway, moving along the return list, Nia Coffey back with the Atlanta Dream, a 2-year $300K deal. That's from Hunter Cruz of the Next. Nia Coffey, 7 points, 5 boards, over a block, shot 40% from 3 for the Dream. Very versatile player on both ends of the floor. The Lynx and Bridget Carlton agreeing to a 2-year deal. That's from Rachel Galligan of Windsider. $125K in each year there. Those contract details coming from Howard Megdahl of the Next. 3 points, 2 boards, and 15 minutes for Bridget Carlton. But not a high minute count, a versatile player. I would imagine with some of the moves that Minnesota's made and also some of the absence that they have, she'll have a bigger role. We'll get to see her fill more gaps in Minnesota. So that should be fun. On the Aces front, Kia Stokes back, a 2-year deal from ESPN's Alexis Philippou. $100K in year one, $103K in year two. That's from Ekdahl. 2.6 boards and a block in roughly 20 minutes a game for Kia Stokes. Very important defender for the Aces. Sydney Colson also back. Don't have the contract terms on that one yet. Just breeze through a whole bunch of those. Any of those names pop for you before you move into the outside signings and trades, et cetera?
Well, I mean, we had talked about Kalani Brown. So, again, congratulations on that story paying off to that degree. I do wonder, how does it tie in with a walk being out for the year? Natasha Howard having 1 year left on that deal is just making sure we can maintain what we have big-wise. But still a great story. I think with Coffey and Carlton, you can see trust levels. You can see, hey, we know what we have in this. You're a part of our vision. You're a part of our core. You know, I wonder, especially with Carlton, just the ability to do the little things, space the floor, defend multiple positions. You know, the Lynx are a type of team that build on what they believe in, focus on players that are part of their vision. And you can see with the moves that the Dream have made, they're also looking to put some things in the table.
What are they?
So that's pretty fun there. No real surprise for me with the Aces as far as the hashtag run it back. But very fun stuff. Any names that surprised you that maybe weren't on there?
Names that surprised me that weren't on there. Not off the top of my head. I guess the one that I would have mentioned would be A.D. Durr for Atlanta because of their scoring contributions off the bench. But as we get into some of their other signings and trades, like, it makes sense why that hasn't been a thing yet. So outside of that, I think that's pretty much it for me on the re-signing front. Now, let's get into these outside signings. Let's get into these trades. The Sparks have been busy in particular, so we'll start with a pair of trades from them. As we talked about a little bit earlier, earlier episodes rather, Jordan Canada was courted by the Los Angeles Sparks, but news quickly got out that a sign and trade was in the works. We have the destination. Jordan Canada, you are an Atlanta Dream. Jordan Canada and the number 12 overall pick going to Atlanta in exchange for Ari McDonald and the 8 overall pick. Injury-riddled year for Ari McDonald last year, but did average 8 points and 3 assists. 48% on twos, 32% from 3, 76% from the line. When she's healthy, she's a pretty darn good defender in her own right. But Jordan Canada, she is nasty at the point of attack, and she's coming off of a career year in her own right. Steve, how do you feel about the Jordan Canada fit in Atlanta?
Why are we kicking off with Steve on this one?
What do you mean?
Let's do a quick rewind. social media user at Nikias NBA on January 20th, 2024, Jordan Canada, you are an Atlanta dream question mark. Social media user Nikias at Nikias NBA on January 21st. Good morning. Have we gotten the Jordan Canada trade yet? Now, I have thoughts. I have questions. I'm thinking of things. But let's start off with you. As last year, you were very high on the season that Jordan Canada had. May have, and if I misquote you, correct me. Could have had an all-star case for a little bit. Mm-hmm. Definitely had a most improved player case. Mm-hmm. Showcased exactly what she could do with the opportunity, with the usage. The Dream are a team that has shown potential. I think you've seen the vision. How do you feel about this fit as far as what Jordan Canada can do to boost the Atlanta Dream up, mm-hmm. and how much the Atlanta Dream need a player like Jordan Canada?
I like the fit, first and foremost. I don't think it's a perfect fit, which I think we'll get into, but overall, I like the fit. Jordan Canada is very good, and as you said, with the opportunity, she showcased what she could do with the Sparks last year. Very good driver. Complements that driving ability with a pull-up, too. Career high from three, though, that was only 33%, but did show a willingness to take more threes in the rhythm. Took some off the bounce as well, so growing comfort there. And then the defense, incredibly good at pressuring the ball. Can pick your pocket on ball. Can play the passing lanes off ball. If she is spaced off ball, very good at digging and recovering. And I think once you think about what Atlanta does on both ends and some of the problems that Atlanta's had, particularly offensively, Atlanta led the league in pace last year. But in terms of the tempo of their actual actions, that got a little shaky sometimes, particularly late in games. I think Jordan Canada being able to get the tempo up, being able to push in transition, I think is going to help the overall pace number. But even just getting into their actions earlier and more specifically, just giving them another player that can get downhill and really generate some rim pressure for a team that Alicia Gray, very good at attacking tilted defenses. Ryan Howard, phenomenal shooter, growing driver, really good at attacking and beating tilted defenses. The fact that they had to be the ones to tilt the defense as often as they were, I think led to some problems in the second half of the year and some of the stagnation. And that led to some of the rough fourth quarter losses that they had towards the end of the year. Having Jordan Canada to be that initial pressure point, and now Alicia gets to play off of that. Now Ryan gets to play off of that. I think that should be a lot of fun. So I guess those are my early positive thoughts. I do have some questions, but I'll let you go bounce off of that if you'd like.
Can you do me a favor, Nikias?
What's up?
I'm not going to throw you off too much, okay. But I have my eyes on TV, so I have a thought. Just make sure you throw it back to me. We'll dive into that here shortly, format-wise. I think it's a really good fit. The interesting part for me is I think she no doubt boosts their pick-and-roll attack. Mm-hmm. I think Jordan Canada's driving ability is going to be key for the Dream, especially with their style of play, when they have that movement, when they have that tempo, when they have that pace. The most intriguing part for me is how do they use her off-ball? Does that also boost them? Being able to run staggers or handoffs, the cutting ability. I just like that piece there with their style of play. And when they have it going, when they're executing, when that ball is moving, being able to have a player like Jordan Canada with Ryan Howard, with Alicia Gray, that feels very good for a Dream group that could stagnate offensively, mm-hmm. or could have teams that were sagging off or sitting on the drives. I think that overall gives them a boost. Now, one of the biggest things that I've gone back and forth on, how much of a boost is it giving them? How much usage will there truly be for Jordan Canada? Because I'm trying to balance the Dream, not the heaviest pick and roll team. Mm-hmm. Does that now change because we now have this player? Do we now have more pieces to make what we want to do offensively make sense? And now everything kind of comes together. Is this going to be a type of scenario where, hey, you kind of got to make shots and you also get these opportunities? Any concerns there?
I think that's fair. It's an interesting like chicken or the egg type beat. It was like, is Atlanta not a heavy pick and roll team because they don't have that player, or have they not prioritized that player because of Tanisha Wright's vision, et cetera? Like, okay, we really want to be more movement based. We don't want to default into high pick and roll stuff. If it's more of the latter, like that does complicate the Jordan Canada fit, which bleeds into the biggest slash most obvious question. a career year shooting year for Jordan Canada. The career year is still topped out at 33% from three. In terms of percentage and also volume, because that was over three attempts per game, like that's not enough to bend playoff defenses, which is really what matters. The Dream just broke their playoff drought. They want to continue to progress forward. If her shooting percentages stay around there or if they decline, what does that mean within a playoff context? Especially if you still want Ryan to continue to grow on ball. If you want to continue to give Alicia Gray the on ball opportunities. It's worth wondering, okay, what is going to be the Jordan Canada usage? Will she be spaced? Will they lean into more guard screens off the ball? Because there are counters and things you can build in, but we will have to see that adjustment for Atlanta. So I think it's fair to question like what that portion of it's going to look like if that doesn't continue to progress for her, the shooting portion.
Are we sleeping on the defensive impact?
We shouldn't be. We shouldn't be. I think Alicia Gray has long been one of the best perimeter defenders in the sport. Ryan Howard is already a very good defender, especially when she's locked in. And if you have Jordan Canada handling more of the on-ball responsibility offensively, you got Ryan taking easier looks. In theory, she should have more energy to defend more consistently. So like just that wing tandem should be pretty nasty. And Jordan Canada, in her own right, is a nasty complimentary point of attack defender. Like that should be one of the best defensive trios in basketball if they're healthy. So I don't think anyone should be sleeping on the defense portion. Like I think that's probably your biggest positive. Atlanta, Tanisha Wright has absolutely wanted to establish that defense as a base. We've seen it. When they defend well, they're able to get out in transition. They can hit you with scoring flurries. When that defense isn't right, we have some very testy post-game press conferences from Tanisha Wright wondering, hey, what are y'all doing? Where are the stops? Where's the physicality? Where's the connectivity? Where's the consistency? So I think if Jordan Canada could put more of that into place and kind of help establish that base, they should be much better.
Yeah, that's where I think I'm just kind of in between and talking through it. If you're on the fence, you know, it's probably easy to look at the production from last year and go, hey, Max, this, is that how much better does it make the Dream? I think those are fair questions. But the more we kind of work through it, the more the fit makes sense. Because if that defense is better, we can get out and run more. If we can get out and run more, our flow is going to be better. If our flow is going to be better, we're going to be better offensively. Mm-hmm. I just think the Dream have made moves to address some of the concerns. I know we're only talking about the Canada one right now, that they may have had last year. And so it's more what does this look like than, well, why did you do that? Mm-hmm. Or what does this mean?
Understandable. Let's go to the second Storm trade. Oh, excuse me, second Sparks trade. The Sparks and the Storm agreeing to that deal earlier in the week. The Sparks getting the number 4 overall pick in Kia Nurse. The Storm getting a 2026 first round pick from the Sparks. That opened up a lot of cap room for the Seattle Storm. I think they could get up to 2 max slots. They have already filled one of those with Skylar Diggins-Smith. We will talk about that fit a little bit later. I want to ask you just quickly on the Sparks front. How do you feel about the way they're handling their offseason so far?
I feel fine with it in the context of, well, we no longer have NECA. This isn't going to be our year. That's where, for me, once that piece was gone, I kind of understood some of the pivots and the moves. Getting pick 2, pick 4, pick 8. Clearly, hey, we are moving to the next phase. But I think the thing for me, having a coach like Kurt Miller, being able to add talents like Kia Nurse and McDonald, I'm intrigued. So I don't know necessarily what it's going to do for this year, but I think, hey, we got to pivot. We got to move. It feels Storm adjacent to me. To where, okay, let's try and find the pieces. Who can go with us to the next destination? What can we build? And then moving forward, what can we add to that? That's where my brain went. So I didn't necessarily think that these were horrible trades. It kind of just felt like the reality of the scenario for the Sparks with what was going on.
Yeah. I think if you're going to get hit with the NECA bomb, like, hey, I appreciate the last 12 years. I'm out of here. It's best to pivot as quickly as you can. And to have 3 lottery picks and 2 picks in the top 5, or three first round picks, two picks in the lottery, rather. That's a good place to start. I'm very intrigued by this draft. I'm also very confused by this draft because I have no idea who's going to declare. I tweeted it when this trade happened. Like, in theory, this could be Cameron Brink and Paige Bueckers if either one of those slip to four. And then you feel much better about the Sparks rebuild if that's the reality. If Paige stays for another year, or if Cameron Brink stays for another year, it's still the direction you have to choose, but you're probably pushing things a year ahead, like a year forward. Like, oh, snap, okay, this is going to be kind of rough. We go from here. We really got to slow build this. So I don't really have super negative thoughts. I'm just keeping an eye on who's declaring. And that's just, we just will not know that until tournament time. Another trade while we're talking about draft stuff. The Sun and the Lynx agreeing to a deal. The Sun getting Tiffany Mitchell and the number 19 overall pick. The Lynx getting Natisha Heidemann. That's one way to replace Tiffany Hayes if you're the Connecticut Sun. She retires. We need some more driving punch. We need someone that can connect things in transition. Tiffany Mitchell can do that. Can also defend her tail off. That should be a pretty fun fit. Especially with the, you know, the renewed commitment to pace that we saw for Connecticut under Stephanie White. Natisha Heidemann, new situation for her. I think the shooting is going to be massively important for this Minnesota group. So I'm intrigued. Like, it felt like a fine trade for both sides. How did you feel about the deal when it came through?
I mean, it's one of the things we've talked about with the Sun, their style of play, how they move the ball, quick decisions, good tempo, read and react to a degree. And Tiffany Mitchell is going to be able to drive that basketball. Whether she initiates the possession, whether it's a drive and kick to her, I like that fit. And so my thing is less, what does Tiffany Mitchell add to the Sun? It's more, does it change how teams guard the Sun? Or is it just important for Connecticut to be able to replicate what they've done or been doing? Mm-hmm. Which side do you fall on?
I side more on the latter. And I think the easy thing to pop to go to when you look at just the stats from those two. Natisha Heidemann had a down year, but in general, she's a very good shooter. Tiffany Mitchell, for all the skills that she has, like the three-point shooting in particular, hasn't been something that's been consistent for her throughout her career. And so it's easy to kind of think about that. But it's something that the great Mark Schindler, we're going to go with that moniker, but something they pointed out in his piece that he wrote about the breakdown. Just the difference in decision-making speed between Natisha Heidemann and Tiffany Mitchell. But I think Connecticut is going to take that. And while the shooting may not be there to the same degree, and Mark noted in his piece, Natisha Heidemann was a good shooter. It wasn't like teams were running with their hair on fire trying to run her off the line. It wasn't that ordeal either. Someone that can snap into decisions that quickly, and again, someone that can juice the transition attack, I think they're going to take that decisiveness into year two under Stephanie White. And I think they're going to feel fine with that. Like, there will still be some playoff questions to answer from the shooting standpoint, but like Tiffany knows where to, she knows where to space, how to space. She's also a good cutter on top of that. And her being off ball more, or just being able to play against a tilt more often than she was in Minnesota when she had to just take up backup point guard duties and sometimes starting point guard duties, there should be some pressure off of her as well. So like, I think the fit's going to end up being fine for Connecticut.
That was one of the questions I was going to ask. Being in this type of scenario, obviously, not just with Connecticut's offense, but with Alyssa Thomas, and not having to generate as much, how much does that play into it for you? Mm-hmm. To where now, okay, if I get this swing and it's a pick and roll, or a play's broken down, I can just kind of get a paint touch. How key is that for Connecticut?
Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be big. And again, like, they still have some overarching things to answer within a playoff setting, but I think Tiffany's going to slide in just fine. And I think the processing speed portion of the program should be noted a little bit more in the difference between those two. So I like it for both sides.
How do you feel about the Natisha Heidemann fit in Minnesota? Because I think it's a low-key, might be a better context. Because of Minnesota's need for a point guard, I think there will be less pressure in theory for the shooting to hit. Mm-hmm. And because of that less pressure, the shooting may hit again. Mm-hmm. I think it's an opportunity to go out there and play. So for my eyes, I'm thinking that's kind of a solid move for Minnesota. What do you say?
I like it. Like, I think I want to make sure I phrase it in a way that isn't disrespectful to Minnesota. Like, I think very clearly the Sun were in we want to win a championship mode. And I don't think the Lynx were there yet organizationally. And obviously the Lynx want to continue to improve. They had some signings. We want to talk about those. But like, I do think there's going to be a little less pressure on the teacher just from that standpoint. And that should take some of the weight off the shoulders. And then just in terms of the fit, like, she will have the ball in her hands. I don't think she'll be tasked with making as many decisions. And I think her being able to play off of Fee, like, that should be familiar, like playing off of AT. But she's going to have a whole lot of front court players to play off of to where the shooting could pop in a different way. I think it's going to. I like the fit. I think it should be fine.
Okay, figured I'd pick your brain on that one.
Oh, I appreciate it. Let's get into some of these free agent signings then. We mentioned the Storm were able to clear a whole bunch of space with their trade with the Sparks. They land Skylar Diggins-Smith with a 2-year max from Howard Megdahl of the Knicks. She did miss last season as she gave birth to her second child, but the year before that, 19.7 points, 48% on twos, 30% from three, but that seems like a misnomer with the rest of her career, 84% from the line, 4 boards, 5.5 assists, 1.6 steals, and a block per game the last time we saw Skylar Diggins-Smith. I am very excited to see her and Jewel Lloyd operate together. Just from the Jewel Lloyd context, Jewel shouldn't have to do as much as she had to do last year. There should be so much pressure taking off of her to where she doesn't have to create virtually everything when she's on the floor and be the only person that could really bend things. You should get a better slash more efficient version of Jewel Lloyd. And the Storm should be very happy about that portion. Before even getting into, Skylar can get downhill and finish. Skylar can get to her pull-up whenever she needs to. You can have Skylar come off of screens and then flow into other things if necessary. After a year off, we'll keep an eye on what the defense is going to look like. But the last time we saw her, she very much had a case for an all-defensive team. So even if there's a dip there because of the time off, she should still be pretty darn good defensively. That should take some pressure off for everyone else. I'm excited to see what the pick-and-roll pairing with her and Ezzie Matbagor is going to look like. It feels like a home run, assuming Skylar is able to stay healthy. And again, this is day one officially of free agency. The Storm have plenty of time to add more players. They're in the hunt for Neko Gumake as of recording. No signings happened there. Pershine, I think it's the Storm, the Sky, and the Liberty are the three teams that's on the short list for Neko. So maybe we'll have something for you next week. But if the Storm are able to complete that and get Skylar and Neko in the room, that's a pretty big win in free agency, I would say. A very dull analysis there, but that seems pretty darn good. But Skylar's the type of guard that can fit into just about any system. If you want to worry about the shooting at all, I guess that's fair, but like, I'm not worried about it. I think that's very much going to bounce back, especially since she will also get to play off of Jewel Lloyd and the attention that she'll be able to attract. This seems like a home run to me.
I'm with you. And it kind of ties back into what we talked about earlier. You look at where the Storm were, the caliber of talent they had, what they had to go through last year, and now look where they are now. Here comes a highly, highly, highly motivated Skylar Diggins-Smith.
Yeah.
Highly motivated Skylar Diggins-Smith into Seattle. And, you know, it was hard to imagine the Storm being down that long. You think about the guard play they had last year, and I don't mean that disrespectfully. But now, hey, who led the league in scoring last year, Nikias?
Jewel Lloyd.
The last time we saw Skylar Diggins-Smith, she was third in the league in scoring. That is instant impact. That is a tremendous guard duo. And you mentioned taking pressure off Jewel Lloyd. I think that's so huge. And I think you get that kind of talent without having to necessarily change or alter too much of what you've been doing. Mm-hmm. And now you can even expand on it because, hey, we have more threats. We have Skylar Diggins-Smith who can create in a whole bunch of different ways. It's not just the drives because the paint touches are going to be key. You know, pass and cut with the way the Storm like to move the ball and use things offensively. Straight pick and roll. It's just going to be fun to watch those two be able to operate together offensively. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned Ezzie being able to pick and pop, being able to roll. I think that's just huge. And mainly it's just Seattle Storm basketball feels back Just like that.
You know, as excited as I am to watch Skylar and Jewel play with one another, it's fair to note, the minutes without Jewel Lloyd last year were predictably not great. And so even having the option to say, okay, cool, Jewel, you take a break. Skylar, you can run this unit. It's you and Ezzy now, or you and insert pieces that they add throughout the rest of this offseason. And you're able to play off of that. Lowest of keys, like, I want to see what this means for Jordan Horston, who just kind of filled gaps in her rookie year. Was a screener, could, you know, find her way with some cuts. Got to handle a little bit. Like, I wonder what her usage is going to look like now with that backcourt, or depending on what else happens in free agency, what happens to, I guess, like the volume of reps and opportunities she gets. Does this become a more win now situation in year two than was anticipated? Does that cut into what she grows into in year two? Like, that's something that's at the back of my head, but I want to see how that goes. But I would like to see Skylar and Jordan play off of one another.
Well, I'll ask you this question. Do you think it helps?
It should. It definitely should. I think if nothing else, like, it probably highlights further, okay, where exactly is the jumper with Jordan? Or like, how far along is it, rather? Let's frame it that way. If she's going to be more off ball, if she's not going to get the random, hey, you bring it up, you get into the mid post and do some stuff. Like, if you limit those opportunities, what does that mean? But I'm excited to see them play together and see what it looks like. And then defensively, just very curious to see what it's going to look like. That's just going to be a lot of athleticism that can fly around. And we talked about it throughout the year. Like, there were, like, random months throughout the year where the Storm had a top three defense. So they were not a good team, and the record reflected that. It wasn't because they didn't compete. So now you add Skylar into the room with that. Like, Skylar, Jewel, Jordan, and Ezzy on the floor together, that should be a pretty nasty defensive quartet. So I am excited to see what it looks like. And then just very quickly on the numbers on that front, a minus 13.8 net rating with Jewel Lloyd off the floor last year, a 93.8 offensive rating. That should be a lot better if you just got, like, some Skylar plus bench minutes. But let's continue with the guard train. Natasha Cloud, no longer a member of the Washington Mystics, agreeing to a 2-year deal. $200K in each. That's from Howard Magdahl. First reported by the committee. Christina Williams later confirmed. And we got the contract details from Howard Magdahl. Want to make sure everyone got their credit there. Natasha Cloud coming off a career high in scoring, nearly 13 points per game. 4 boards, 6 assists, over a steal per game. One of the best defenders in the sport. I'm really intrigued by this one because this feels like first domino falls. Phoenix going to try to do something else. This is something that you have been throwing out there pretty consistently, like, hey, man, the Mercury are going to try to do some things. I'm going to try to build this out quickly. Getting Natasha Cloud in the building seems like a nice first step. Solidify that point of attack defense. Get a driver in the room. Get someone that can play make. It's also fun pick and roll reads from her last year. Seems like a pretty solid ad, and I'm excited to see what the Mercury do from here.
Ah. Natasha Cloud to the Mercury, huh? Yep. What do you know? The number one thing for me that jumps off here is that defense. Bringing that defense to that Mercury team, being able to defend multiple positions, be able to take matchups, be able to make things a little bit easier on the perimeter and get after some of these players, that's going to be huge. I think that's really going to help them. I think the more the Mercury can get stops, the more they can get in transition, the better off they'll be. They can actually generate some easy baskets. I am curious to see what it looks like. Obviously, I think the motivation factor will be high, depending on how you feel about how things ended in Washington. My mind goes to the drives. I think Natasha Cloud's ability to get in the paint, you know, whether it's off a kick, whether it's in pick and roll, is going to help Phoenix and generate offense for them. I think in theory, less of a scoring burden to a degree. Mm-hmm. To where in Washington, it felt like, okay, Natasha Cloud has to do X and she has to do Y. It can be a little bit more natural in Phoenix to a degree. Mm-hmm. So I'm intrigued to see what that looks like. I know she had the interview during the free agency special with Holly Rowe, mentioned the organization, mentioned the investment that the Mercury have put into it, talked about the connection with Christy Tolliver. So it seems like the fit is going to be there. But I think if we're talking Phoenix, you're looking to add and put yourself back into a different zone in the W, that's a key signing.
Mm-hmm. Also mentioned during the interview with Holly Rowe that she thinks she'll fit right in with the spicy attitude there. So we will keep eyes on that one.
Who's spicy?
Yep. All right. Well.
Okay. All right. That fits. Quick question for you.
What's up?
I'm going to ask you this specifically. With Skylar going to Seattle, with Natasha Cloud going to Phoenix, do you view this in any way, shape, or form as, or in an Aces context?
I think you should, because one, they just have the capital to build out the next version of a super team, if you want to go that route. And then even just within the guard moves in particular, I talked about Skylar's defense. We talked about Natasha Cloud's defense. If you know, with the small sample of losses that we've seen from the Aces over the past 2 years, in those losses, teams are able to bother Chelsea Gray. They're able to disrupt her some kind of way, which thus disrupts the flow of the Aces offense. If you now have Natasha Cloud in the room and say, hey, how about you take the Chelsea Gray assignment? If you have Skylar Diggins-Smith, hey, you pester Chelsea Gray. It feels like they're looking for answers on that front. If they don't want to go to pure, let's put size on her option. So within that lens, like, yeah, but overall, I think it's just about these teams just trying to get better. But within the Aces context, like, that stands out.
Okay. Can I raise my hand real quick?
Sure.
And do the callback, because you didn't remind me. Towards the end of the free agency special, Alexa Philippou dropped some Elena Deladon news.
Oh, did she? This should be good.
Mentioned two teams potentially for EDD. Can you guess who those two teams are, buddy?
Well, you know, this is the audio only version. Steve has been smiling this entire time. So I'm going to take a wild guess that it's the Phoenix Mercury that's already been reported and the Las Vegas Aces. How did I do?
1,000%. Now, bud, your thoughts?
Well, so here's the thing, right? I go back like a year and a half ago before Candace left the sky. And I jokingly, you know how people do the, if you're familiar with Warriors Twitter, they look like, hey, here's Steph dapping up somebody. Mm-hmm. That means he's eventually going to play with him. So I like jokingly did the Asia and Candace picture. Whatever. Then we got to Candace's free agency. And you were like, hey, what about Candace to the Aces? I was like, I would love that because Candace is like one of my favorite players ever. But like, that ain't about to happen. She's not about to join the freaking Aces. And she joins the Aces. I was like, okay, well, Steve was right. That's cool. Also, waves aren't wildly is what's going on with the Aces right now. So I can't even celebrate it. But yeah, so that happened. And now we here with EDD, as you've been saying, get ready to learn Aces, buddy. And I'm just like, I hear you, but like, I don't think that's going to happen, though. I still land, I think EDD is just going to end up being a Mercury if it's going to be between those two teams. And like the reporting we talked about in earlier episodes, the Mercury reportedly looking for draft compensation there. I would imagine the Mercury have a little bit more to play with there than the Aces do, or at least their picks will be better projected than the Aces would, since they are really, you know, coming off of back-to-back championships. So I can't say it's impossible, and you have been right before. So I'm definitely not going to rule it out. That would be interesting, especially in light of the Candace backdrop. I think during the free agency special, Alexa said that the Aces and Candace are keeping in touch. Candace has said like she wants to play if her body allows for it, and she isn't going to cheat the game. She wants to make sure she's cool. I think Alexa also said that the Aces and Candace Bray is going to check back in closer to training camp time to see how that goes. So if they're doing the holding pattern with Candace, then you add in, again, Sydney Colson's back. Kia Stokes is back. Both unprotected contracts, so the Aces could create some more wiggle room if necessary, cap-wise. And then they also add another big that we'll talk about shortly. I would be very surprised if it ends up being the Aces over the Mercury. I think there's, and even beyond that, I think there's just going to be more playtime opportunity in Phoenix. And then with the Aces. Obviously, you could start EDD and Asia together. But I would imagine she would be higher on the scoring pecking order in Phoenix. So like my mind goes to if it's of those two, it's going to be Phoenix versus the Aces, but I can't rule it out. And hey, if she's prioritizing regular season maintenance and just not having to do as much, her being lower on the scoring pecking order may favor the Aces. So can't even put all my eggs in that particular basket. So
I got you. And then also before you continue, I will do my due diligence in the, let me tell stuff to Nikias so he doesn't find out after. Andrea Carter, 10 minutes ago, tweeted out Jordan Canada's contract with Atlanta, 2-year guaranteed, 2024,
185, 2025, 190. Oh, well, there we go. So sub max, but still a healthy pay bump from the training camp contract that she was on last year. Again, a phenomenal season for Jordan Canada, especially once you add in that context. And thank you, Steve, once again, for sparing me from some annoyance. While we are still on guards, let's go back to Minnesota. We talked about Natisha Hydeman and her new fit there and maybe not having to have as much responsibility. Another feather in the cap on that front. Courtney Williams, you are a Minnesota Lynx. 2-year deal, first reported by Christina Williams of Girls Talk Sports. And I guess first predicted by Twitter. Shout out Bailey Caldwell, who saw like the screenshot. It's like, wait a minute, I recognize their ear. And I will say, to add even more context to that, that is just the first person that I saw make that guess. So if he wasn't first, that wasn't intentional. That's just, that is the first tweet reference that I saw from that in the guess. And then we got the report from Christina earlier today. So how do we feel about the Courtney Williams fit? 10.6 boards, career high, 6.3 assists last year. Really took on a heavy playmaking burden for Chicago last year and looked pretty darn good doing so. Her chemistry with Elizabeth Williams and pick and roll was fun. How do you feel about her in Minnesota?
I am intrigued. The number one thing that jumped off the page to me was the ability to score, the self-creation element. I think that boosts the Lynx offense. Blending it with some of the movement they have, sometimes it can bog down. So I think having that, I'm intrigued by the Lynx. When you talk about the ability of Kayla McBride, when you talk about what obviously what Nafisa Collier can do, when you think about what Courtney Williams could add to that team, and you add Alana Smith to it, I've been thinking about the Lynx because it feels like they've been lurking to a degree. And it kind of feels like they're adding, again, pieces that fit what they want, how they're going to improve. Not to mention, you know, obviously the play that Diamond Miller showed last year. That's an intriguing bunch.
Yeah.
To me, as far as being able to get after on both ends of the floor. So I think that's a solid signing, a really good fit. What say you?
I like it. Like, the Lynx are starting to profile once again as the team that could beat literally anyone on any given day, but also could lose because the offense doesn't work or they just get beat off the bounce a bunch. And so, like, I'm still trying to conceptualize them. Again, it's day one of free agency right now, so it's still plenty of time for them to build out the roster, to have a draft to do, et cetera, et cetera. But with Courtney, like, I have the empty side pick and rolls with her and Elizabeth Williams in my head, and it's like, okay, what is this going to look like with Fee? As someone that can roll, someone that can pop, someone that can short roll into a post up if teams are switching. Like, okay, now Fee just gets to bully smaller players if you're trying to switch. And as Courtney Williams went through the very dramatic shot profile transformation under James Wade while he was there, very much like, hey, we know you love getting to those middies. We know you can get to those. How about you just take threes, though, if you can do that? So, like, after that, I do wonder, like, what the conversations with her and Cheryl Reeve were like. Was that, like, a point of, hey, we would like for you to continue to optimize your shot profile, or, hey, just be you, and what that means for her comfort and what that means for Lynx offense overall. But I do like the fit. And again, like, within the context of the Natisha Hydeman trade, that's someone that can take pressure off of her from a ball handling perspective. And now maybe you get easier decisions for Natisha to make on the fly. So it feels pretty solid to me. It's also just a surprising one. Can I ask you a very quick question, respectfully, Messi?
Yeah.
Hey, how annoyed is Chicago?
Probably
both of them.
You know, like the when you go to get wings, like the sauce right above mild, but it's not hot. Like original buffalo.
Not original Buffalo. Come look at it like, wait a minute. You got Alana Smith and also Courtney Williams. If I'm Chicago, I'm like, hey, I don't want to lose either of them unless we got an obvious upgrade coming in. Not only do you lose both to the same team. Like, I would be a little hot at least. I ain't going to hold you. Also, we did get the contract terms from Howard Magdal on Courtney Williams, $175,000 in year one, $180,000 in year two. And for Alana Smith, $150,000 each year, which makes me feel very good about my mental figure as I was doing DeMont free agency with the Her Hoop Steps crew. And I came in like, ooh, I would like to get Alana Smith. I think about 150 is going to be a solid baseline. I go up to 170 in that series. And then a friend of the program, Kevin Pelton, came in with the 2-year max. And I was like, well, I have no shot at landing Smith now. So that's cool. So 150 just made me feel warm and fuzzy.
Pelton had the storm, right?
Yes.
Right idea. Different player.
Yeah, if we get that 2-year max to Skyler. but no, they end up being fun. Right. Oh, you got to say something?
Can I add to the respectful messiness?
Sure.
Is this just revenge for the Canada game?
Oh. Well, when you put it that way, it might just be. That's a good shot. That's a really good callback. All right, very quickly, back to the Las Vegas Aces, who have made a free agency signing. Megan Gustafson agreeing to a 2-year deal that first reported from Rachel Galligan, again, of Winsider, excuse me. $94K in year one, a little over $96K in year two. It is an unprotected contract. All those contract details coming from Howard Mechdahl of The Next. Megan averaged 8 points and 4 boards last year, shot 35% from three, but low volume, 58% on twos. She also averaged 14-7 in 4 starts with the Phoenix Mercury. I'm intrigued with the signing. I'm also like, I won't say scared. Scared is too strong of a word. But I'm also cautious because I feel like I was super excited for the Kayla George signing. And like that one didn't pay off the way that I thought it would until that game 4 in the finals. I was expecting the full breadth of things, but she really just ended up being like the 3rd or 4th big for Vegas. And so I would imagine if they are able to get Candace back, or if the EDD thing actually happens, like, I don't know how large the role for Megan is going to be for Vegas, which is fine, like, barring injuries and stuff like that. But just on paper, I don't know how large the role will be. But in terms of the skill, like, good post score. Passing is interesting. Can't say it's great yet, but, like, passing is interesting. Think she'll be a fit into some of the stuff that the Aces run. The 3-point shooting is going to be worth keeping an eye on. If she does up the volume and able to maintain that efficiency, she's going to be a very interesting big for that second unit. To where if you do want to sit more of your starters during the staggered portion of the program, you can throw the ball down to Megan sometimes. You can invert the offense. So, like, I understand the fit. I just don't know how much of an impact she's going to have because of who she's probably going to be behind in the depth chart.
Is it more just, A, the archetype for the Aces as far as being able to expand on what, quote-unquote, the backup big would be? And, B, is it having someone where, realistically, if we need to steal a few more minutes for Asia, we could, in theory, do so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think she could slot in. Again, the fact that she can, and I noted in like a small thread that I did, the fact that it's not like you have to call and run your offense through her. She'll very much defensive board, outlet, run the floor hard, quick seal, and she's very good at sealing. So you can just steal some extra, you can steal some points or draw some fouls just off of that in a way that you maybe didn't see that from like Kia or, you know, Kayla's is more going to space than get the deep seals and get stuff like that. So like she can bring a different dimension to the second unit.
No, I'm intrigued. The quick seals, the ability to also pop in space. Like, I feel like that kind of versatility is what the Aces like. So that intrigues me. I have 2 questions. Which one would you like to choose first?
We'll go in order. We'll get the first question and the second question.
All right. So the first one is, how do you feel about the defensive fit?
I am worried off the top of my head. She is a foul heavy big. The mobility isn't great, so I worry a little bit about the scheme versatility. One thing I do want to do, maybe I can just circle back to this in a later episode, I want to see or get just a quick refresher on how much Phoenix went to zone last year. And if so, I want to see like what she looked like in those zone possessions, and maybe I feel a little bit better since the Aces are a team that isn't scared to do it. So maybe that just becomes second unit run zone type beat, and it's more fine. But just in a vacuum, it feels like it's very much she will be in a drop. You hope she can test without fouling. And you hope the players that she's playing with, if we're talking about the second unit, Alicia Clark's going to be out there. Mentioned up top, like Sydney Colson's back. If she's going to have more of a regular season role, her screen navigation is going to be important for this group. We'll see what kind of defensive growth we see from Kirsten Bell and whatever else they add to the bench. Like, if you can build enough defense around those second units, maybe she'll be okay. But, like, in a vacuum, I don't feel great about it.
Okay. And then are you ready for the second question?
Ooh, what you got for me?
To be respectfully messy, you think Chelsea Gray forgot about that foul?
Oh. I hate how good you are at this. The good news is Steve has coach brain and a very long memory. The bad news is that Steve has coach brain and a very long memory. You know, after another title and, you know, Chelsea's doing stuff with the Kings, et cetera, you know, I think they'd be able to work some stuff out.
Okay. Just figure out ask.
Chelsea will meet the dog. It'd be all good. Yeah,
that's it.
Disarm her. So we'll rock that out. Very quickly on the Mystics front, Mystics getting Carly Samuelson on a 2-year deal, $115K in year one, a little over $118K in year two. That's from Jen Hatfield of the Knicks. Samuelson averaged a shade under 8 points per game, 53% on twos, 43% from threes, three boards, two assists for the Sparks last year. How do you feel about the fit?
Very good. Number one, salute to Carly Samuelson for finding a home after the journey that she went on. Being able to stick somewhere, that's fantastic. I think especially for the next phase of the Mystics, if we're talking about them having to move on from some of the pieces they've had, I think it's a good addition. The shooting is there. The defense is there. Like, I mean, she is going to work on ball and off ball, does the little things offensively. You can use her in movement off ball. She can make reads if you need a stagger space, quick pick and roll handoff. I think just slides right into what the Mystics like to do. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you have Sykes, you have Atkins, you have Samuelson, they're going to give some effort defensively. Mm-hmm. And you throw in Shakira Austin, the Mystics are reshaping and reforming, but there is a pump fake there if you like defense.
Yeah. Like, I think Carl should slide in, which also is just funny that now the Mystics are addressing the spacing while EDD may be gone and Natasha Cloud is already gone. It's just like, oh.
It is. It's always a little curious whether it's the W or the NBA when a team signs a player that you would have liked them to have had a year before. Mm-hmm. But it just kind of works out that way.
It's pretty interesting, but, you know, neither here nor there. And then a training camp contract on this front, but Dede Richards, a wing, also going to the Mystics. Didn't see her in the W last year, but very fun defender in college, very fun defensive flashes for the Liberty when she was there. Assuming she makes the final roster, like, that seems fun. And just a quick shout out to Miles Ehrlich, who I knew is jumping out of his skin. That's Didi's back in the league, one of his favorites in the league. So also should just be tremendous vibes there as well. I like the Didi signing. I like the Didi flyer. There's going to be some minutes there on the wing or in the guard room. I'm curious to see her back and see what it looks like.
Keep an eye on that versatility, especially in the Mystics context.
Indeed. Let's go back to the Atlanta Dream. A couple of signings. One, the Dream and Ariel Powers agreeing to a 1-year deal. That's first reported by Christina Williams, Girls Talk Sports. That 1-year deal is worth $155K. That's from Hunter Cruz of the Knicks. Ariel Powers with a career low in points last year, but as we talked about on the pod last year, not a lot of playing time. Some DMPs, some interesting things happening there with the relationship there. So you seem very happy to be out of there. So I would imagine a larger role in Atlanta, especially if A.D. Durr isn't back. Should slot in pretty easily as a bench scorer. Did you have deeper thoughts on Ariel Powers' fit in Atlanta?
I am intrigued on what it looks like, mainly because of the Dream fit. Now, I think in theory, fresh opportunity, new start. We've seen the scoring ability. The driving should pop. I think there's a piece of that fits. Now, what's the opportunity going to look like? How much opportunity is going to be there? What do the lineups look like? Is it going to be catch and go? Is it going to be catch and hold? That's my only concern. Mm-hmm. I think the talent plus need makes a ton of sense. It's just more the execution, how it comes together, which I know sounds like a bailout, but it's day one, and that's where my brain went. Like, Ariel Powers can hoop. Going to be motivated try and wash away last year. Ultimately, like, could they close with AP?
I feel like if she's closing, it's a super she's cooking night. I just think in the perimeter room, like, unless someone's hurt or foul trouble, like, Alicia Gray is going to be on the court. Ryan Howard is going to be on the court. I'd imagine it's just going to be another guard. And so if she's closing, then Jordan Canada isn't. And so, again, that's either Ariel is super cooking and she led like a fourth quarter comeback with 13 in the fourth. You just stick with the lineup that's out there. Or maybe it's more shooting slash scoring concerns with Jordan if it did go the other way. And that breeds more questions. At least that's how I'm thinking about it on day one.
Well, I guess, do we exchange that, and I like that point, with what AP could do for the bench lineups? Mm-hmm. As far as just philosophically, okay, we can still maintain some of what we like to do. We have some of the rim pressure and scoring. Do you take that exchange?
I think so, especially if it hits. I guess to your point, and I'm glad you said it because I was going to if you didn't. Like, is this going to be a lot of catch and hold for Ariel Powers? Because we know she can score. I don't think that's ever been in question. The question is, like, okay, what types of shots are you getting when you do self-create? And how long did it take for us to get to this look? Or when did you get to this look? Is this early clock? Is this, we ran an action, you come off a screen, we get it to you. Now it's supposed to be a pick and roll, and if it doesn't work, it goes to the other side. Is it catch, hold, look at your defender, now going to the screen, now it's a pull-up? Atlanta had enough of those catch and hold sequences last year. And so it should be muted with her, you know, if you're just saying she's running the second unit. And so maybe it might not hurt as much, but ultimately you do want the bench to feel better than it did at times last year. So I think that portion of it's worth keeping an eye on. But if she's able to find the right balance, she should absolutely be a plus. And also, just to very quickly backtrack on the Dee Dee Richards front, because the first thing that I saw was the Mystics press release. But Dee Dee did announce that signing herself on the 3-on-3 pod with Tarika. So I wanted to give them the quick hat tip. Her, Chris Williamson, some tremendous folks. So I just wanted to give them a quick shout out there. Of Why Won't the Dream? Tina Charles is back. A one-year, $130K deal from Howard Magdal. Didn't sign with the team last year. Last time we saw her as a member of the Mercury and then later the Storm. 15 points, 7 boards, 2 assists, 36% from 3. 49% on twos. This one is the one that really caught me the most off guard.
I was going to say, do you want to give the audience your live reaction to it?
Yeah, I just did not have, like, I literally tweeted in all caps because I saw the news late. Because I think we were like midstream whenever it happened. So I got off the stream and saw that. And I literally tweeted all caps, Tina Charles, question mark? And with no further context, which I should probably add some context to that because I don't have like beef for her or anything. But yeah, I didn't see Atlanta as the landing spot. Honestly, after not seeing her last year, I thought this was just going to be she just cooks overseas and it's an unceremonious end to a very good W career. It'll be an unfortunate end, but like that's just kind of where I saw it going because of how the Storm stint ended and not getting signed last year. Back in Atlanta is interesting. I think from a pure talent perspective, if you have Cheyenne Parker starting, Ileana Rupert started to get more of those backup 5 minutes last year as the year went on. She's not going to be with the Dream this year. She's preparing for Olympic play slash international play overall. You replace Ileana Rupert with Tina Charles. That is a talent upgrade. That is a scoring upgrade. That is someone that should help you with the second unit. And as we talked about Ariel Powers, if that's your 1-2 punch off the bench, and naturally I don't think they're going to sit all their stars at the same time. So it'll probably be like Jordan plus bench or Alicia Gray plus those two. Or whatever. Like, in theory, that should be pretty darn good. I don't know what to expect. I'm not in a great place with the defense with Tina at this stage. And also, do we get to a point to where we get off to a hot 3-week start and it's like, hey, why am I only averaging 21 minutes? What happens there? I don't want to be completely unfair, obviously, but like those are thoughts as we're thinking through this live. I just did not expect this to be the landing spot. But I could absolutely see how it helps, but I want to see this one.
I believe she played with Tanisha Wright, right?
I believe so. That's I can look up while you talk.
If I'm wrong, yell at me, but that could play a factor. Mm-hmm. I guess for me, the biggest thing was, boy, the Dream, they are pushing some chips in. I think they are attempting to move the needle as far as moving up. And, hey, we got some more size. I like Tina Charles. Obviously, we know she can produce, one of the greats of all time. You have another anchor offensively. If you play her and Cheyenne together, you have two screeners. You can balance out lineups, as you mentioned. It should help if things bog down offensively. If defenses are keeping everything in front, or in a tight half court battle, you have someone you could throw the ball to, can space the floor. Depending on how you stagger things, again, second unit should get a boost, as you said. Are you ready? Are you ready for? Are you ready for Tina Charles to start?
Okay, so one, no. Two, the follow-up question is Cheyenne Parker ready for Tina Charles to start?
Hey, get ready to learn high and low. Because
we already got some of, like, didn't we already have, like, post-All-Star break antics with Parker starting and suspension and reason was there, no reasons there, et cetera, while they're on a win streak, all that good stuff. If you watched a bunch of Dream post-game pressers, like seeing her sit beside Tanisha Wright, someone's just like, is this we lost and I'm frustrated, or should we be reading more into this? Like, that feels like a very tricky dynamic. Also, to answer your question, there was overlap between Tina Charles and Tanisha Wright with the Liberty in 2015-2016.
So you were all right. I did not misinform the public. That's what I'm talking about, baby. It's fun to have Tina Charles back. Can I ask a respectfully messy question?
Sure.
Was it the 27-point-15 rebound game against the Dream in 2022 that did this?
Oh. Isn't there an NBA analog for this? Coach science player that cooked this? I'm trying to think of who it was. Was it Doc that got that?
I think he did, but I've lost track of what Doc's gotten at this point.
Yeah, Doc's gotten a little bit of everything. But yeah, that's, yeah. Maybe that plays a, I tell you what, this is a very boom or bust free agency period for the Dream. I am not going to be surprised if we hit like All-Star break in July or whatever, and we're talking through some of the signs like, man, Atlanta really nailed their offseason. I will also not be surprised if we hit the All-Star break and Atlanta's like 13 and or Atlanta's like 11 and 16. And we're like, none of these moves hit the way that we thought they would. I am in a headlock with Atlanta right now.
Do you think these moves are a belief in the core, or you think they're trying to accelerate it?
Feels like a little bit of yes. Like in the Jordan case in particular, like I feel like that's just both. We want to accelerate because we need better point guard play. Also, we can make life easier for Ryan Howard and Alicia Gray if we have someone that can push Price, get downhill, get them off the ball more.
Secondary question. Is this, and I asked the Aces contest question earlier, so I'll flip it a little bit. Is this a, hey, Dallas, Connecticut, New York, y'all not doing that to us again?
You know, get a little bit more oomph in the room. That could, the team ain't going back down. Aerial Powers ain't going back down. Jordan ain't going back down. That could help. So I can definitely see the argument there. I think that's fair. All right, moving along from the Atlanta Dream to the Connecticut Sun. Rachel Banham to the Sun.
Banham.
Gosh darn it. That's from a report coming from Jackie Powell of the Next. A 2-year deal, $95K each from Howard Megdahl. Rachel Banham, shade under 6 points per game last year, did shoot 40% from three, and she's shooting 40% from three over her last four seasons for a Connecticut group that could use some extra shooting in the room, especially since Rebecca Allen is an unrestricted free agent. As said on the free agency special on ESPN 2, Phoenix Mercury in talks with her as well. Not that that's, you know, a done deal. Maybe it is by the time the pod's over with. But nice to get some shooting reinforcements in the room. And Rachel Banham should certainly help on that front. And if you were concerned about losing any of the shooting from the Tisha Heideman when you bring Tiffany Mitchell in, Rachel helps. And I think with the up-tempo style we saw from Connecticut last year, her being able to play off of Alyssa Thomas, if their minutes overlap with some of those second units and stuff, that should be pretty fun. Like, this feels like a pretty hand-in-glove fit. Also, if you're going to have a bunch of size and length in the front court for the Connecticut Sun, that should help Rachel on the defensive end. Any Rachel Banham thoughts?
Return to Connecticut is it's a great fit. I'm glad you mentioned that. Not just the shooting, but also, hey, I don't have to try and do point guard stuff. Mm-hmm. we can play. Like I can just kind of play. There's movement. I can space. There's people that are driving and kicking to me. Like we can remove that of the equation, and I can go shoot and I can make plays and just kind of hoop. So I think her fit with how they play and her ability to shoot and their need for that. That's where I'm like, yeah, two thumbs up. Well done, Connecticut. I think this is why it's important to have an identity to where, okay, we may lose players, we may gain players, we may have players we thought would do this and don't, but we know what we need. And if we can add that to our program, we can elevate. And so I like the fit.
I got you. I guess while we're on the Sun, I think it was Alexa who was on screen at this point talking about some of the Dawana Bonner options and it not being just a slam dunk that she's back in Connecticut. I would imagine that's still your betting favorite if you believe in that portion of it. But Dawana Bonner in talks with Phoenix and others. I guess one, how likely do you think it is that Dawana is elsewhere or staying in Connecticut?
For me personally, I would be shocked if she's not in Connecticut. I wouldn't, you know, but also we're looking at a season where NECA and EDD both appear to be on the move, but I would be surprised.
Got you. And I guess just from there, like if she did go elsewhere, is it just, okay, Rebecca, here's a blank check. Maybe not blank check. You don't give Rebecca the max, but like, okay, we are prepared to pay a little bit more than market value to bring her back so we can maintain at least most of what we did last year.
That's the part where it gets tricky for me because Dawana is a part of that sauce to make that work in Connecticut. And I love the tempo. I love what they've done offensively. They fight defensively, but Dawana gives it that extra. I can self-create. I can attack. I can mix in post-ups. You got to worry about me at a different level. Could Connecticut just lean in on what they've been doing? Absolutely. But I just think in some of those nights where things are going rough or the shots aren't falling, things are bogging down, having Dawana helps them in such a way that I don't know if you can just copy paste that part of it, you know?
Yeah. Oh, that makes sense. Back to the Chicago Skies. We talked a little bit about them through the context of Alana Smith and also Courtney Williams saying we'll go to Minnesota. Lindsey Allen, you are a Chicago Sky. A 2-year deal, $90,000 in each year. That's from Howard McDowell of the Next. Lindsey averaged 6.2 points, 4.5 assists, only 1.3 turnovers last year. 45% on twos, a comfortable mid-range pull-up that she has in the bag. Only 21% from three, not so great. 79% from the line, but low volume there. How do you like the fit for Lindsey Allen in Chicago?
Again, I'm Uno reverse carding. How do you like the fit? Because you, in parentheses, asked, hey, can we talk about the Sky real quick? So you tell me, where are you at?
I like Lindsey Allen, and I think she is going to bring a level of stability to the backcourt. And I think she is someone that can help get Marina Mabry in her spot, someone that can get Kalia Copper into her spots. And again, like she does have a pull-up mid-range jumper that she can get to when necessary. And so just from an organizing standpoint, there we go, I can speak. Like I think that'd be helpful. Getting a vet point guard in the room just to help aid in the development of Dana Evans, who is apparently killing it overseas right now and really has some fun flashes the second half of last year. In particular, I think that should be good for her. I am thinking of this like Dana Evans is going to be the starting point guard. And Lindsey Allen will back that up. And maybe you can play them alongside each other in some lineups to help balance some stuff out if necessary. So, like, I like it. Within the broader context of Chicago, like, again, it's day one of free agency as we record. It does feel a little bit like a letdown that you lose your top two free agents. And your first signing is what should be probably a really good, but your backup point guard. So I just kind of want to see what else Chicago does and how they're able to build off of what last year was.
Now, if they were to get NECA, would that change how you feel?
I mean, yeah, because that's a top 10 player in the league. I certainly feel better. Like, I would certainly feel better. Again, if the options are Chicago with some things in flux, Seattle with technically some things in flux, but you have Jewel Loyd in tow. You just added Skylar Diggins-Smith. You have another all-star in Ezzy Magbegor. You can kind of slide in at the four right there. And the Liberty, who were just in the finals. I would be surprised if it's Chicago. It's not impossible. But if she goes to Chicago, I think she fits in like a glove. Like, the defensive front court of her and Elizabeth Williams would be tremendous. And then you throw Kalia Copper in there, who could also can defend on the wing. If you get Dana Evans at the point of attack, like, that should be a lot of fun. Like, it's easy to see Chicago is a good team if they get NECA. Like, I just wonder, like, what else they could do to push good team into, you know, the contender list, I guess would be where I would go from there. So we'll just have to see on that front.
Ooh, can I do a follow-up real quick?
Sure.
Should they be swinging for those fences? Or do we need to add to see how good we are?
I guess I still land on add to see how good we are. I guess I'll ask you a follow-up question. Does the pick situation for Chicago change the calculus on any of that?
Like, for do you think me? They should?
Yeah, like, no. Should they be? Okay.
For you?
No, like, I mean, you know how I felt about that trade. We don't have to rehash that. But, like, in general, I just wonder, okay, we don't have those picks in the door. Like, does it matter? Not does it matter, because obviously it all matters. But, like, is there more pressure to swing for championship ceiling? Or the picks are out the door anyway. We just need to make sure that we aren't the worst team in the league. Like, I just wonder, like, do they have more or less pressure to push forward to that degree?
I think it's building around Kyle Murray and Mabry. Mm-hmm. And that might take another, I don't want to say gap year, but hey, this is what we got. We need to build around it and we can compete. If we can compete at a certain level, maybe the next domino falls. I think they're in that phase.
Okay. All right. Want to see where you were there. Let's talk a little Indiana Fever, and then we will close with your New York Liberty, good sir. The Fever, with a two-pack from Howard Magdal of the Knicks, Katie Lou Samuelson and Damaris Dantas, she's back. Both of them agreeing to two-year deals. Katie Lou Samuelson gave birth to a child last year, so did not play. The year before that, 10 points, 3 boards, 2 assists, and a steal. Shot 35% from 3. Last time we saw Damaris Dantas, averaged 5 points, 4 boards, and 2 assists. Shot 26% from 3. Not great, but we do have years and the record of her shooting much better. She's a fun stretch option and someone that can move the ball, can throw it to her in the high post. I'm very intrigued by both of these fits. I think with Katie Lou being able to fill gaps the way that she can and also just adding that element of shooting, that should upgrade the wing room, the wing slash forward room. And I do wonder, just for her, like how often she's going to be playing the 3 versus playing the 4. And what kind of a lineup combinations that unlocks for the Fever, especially if you are anticipating Caitlin Clark to declare and then thus be drafted number 1 from the Fever. So like obviously that is going to be the biggest biggest acquisition for the Fever this offseason, assuming she declares. But so just trying to envision like what the lineup combinations are going to look like with Katie Lou. But again, I think someone with her shooting ability and just her ability just to read space and make quick decisions when she does get the ball, I think it's going to be very valuable for that group. And for Damaris Dantas, I guess, does she just take the Emma Cannon role of bench player that will set screens and I will shoot all of the threes if necessary so we can really invert the floor and open up some driving lanes for everyone else? I feel like that's a role that she can fill. Can maybe quibble about the contract number, but the Fever had plenty of money to spend. They are not in the hunt for your NECAs and your Skylers, et cetera. And so, like, I don't really mind them tossing out the two-year deals to make sure let's get some quality veterans in the room. Let's help move this forward from what we saw the second half of last year in particular. So it feels like a couple of quality signs from me from the Fever. Well, what say you?
I love the Katie Lou fit. I think one thing that stands out to me, the number one thing is shooting. Mm-hmm. That's something the Fever have needed or wanted, at least more volume. I think the bigger boost is not just the ability to shoot. How can Katie Lou be used within the context of the Fever's offense when it comes to movement, and having someone who is a threat involved in some of the movement actions is a little bit different than some of the movement they've ran. I think having someone who, okay, if we're doubling Leah Boston, that ball swings. Oh, there's a third of a drive. It's kick. Oh no, Katie Lou Samuelson's open. Like, I just think there are so many of those little pieces that fit. And if you can open the playbook up in addition to just the little things, being able to drive closeouts, make the right reads, compete defensively, I just think that's a boost for the Fever. And it fits and adds to what they're building there. So that should be fun. For Dontas, the passing actually is something that is in the back of my brain, mm-hmm. as far as, you know, playing through her, a little bit of hub work, some movement off that. So I'm keeping an eye on that. But that's a really, really solid signing for Indiana to be able to, quote unquote, have the youth movement, add a veteran who could shoot in Katie Lou. I think that's a plus, especially when you saw how teams were, you know, in theory, the Indiana had movement and tempo. They were trying to play with a certain pace, and there's some nights defense said, hey, we don't want to cooperate with that. Pass it there. Now you have not only that's a threat, but a willing shooter that you can move around and use in different ways. I think that's a plus.
Got you. Quick question for you on the Fever front, with Katie Lou entering the fray. What do you think this says about Lexi Hull's role / minutes heading into next season? Or is that unaffected in your opinion?
I don't think it's as affected. If anything, it should just make things easier to a degree. I mean, it may change the # starting portion of it, if you look at it in that lens. Mm-hmm. But despite some of the starts, it was still about 20 minutes a game, right?
I believe so, yeah.
I still think she'll get her run and continue to develop. I think she's someone that's valued by that team. I think it's, you know, there's going to be less pressure and more options. So we'll see. Does that now allow more wiggle room to just go out there and play and compete as opposed to I need to do this or I need to do that? Is there more comfort with the second unit? Like, those are little things that you think about going ahead, but I don't think it necessarily, you know, pushes Lexi Hull to the back of the line.
Got you. A couple of quick ones before we end with your Liberty, just updating a transaction site and just to make sure I didn't miss anyone. Emily Inksler back to Washington on a training camp contract. We will see if she's able to stay healthy. If so, the defense is fun. Obviously, I can make some plays with the ball in her hands. We'll see where the shot lands. The Los Angeles Sparks and Ray Burrell agreeing to a multi-year deal. Still waiting on terms on that front. For the New York Liberty, talked about Jonquel Jones a little bit earlier. It also floated out again. Various reporters have said that Neko Gumbuke, at least thinking about the New York Liberty on the short list. During the W free agency special, Alexa Philippou noted that Ivana Dojkic is coming to the New York Liberty. Don't have the terms on that one yet. But buddy, let me tell you, I love that for her. Like I was someone that had her or would have had her on an all-rookie team before she was no longer in the rotation and thus no longer with the Storm as she went back overseas. The shooting is fun, quality playmaker in my opinion, competes defensively. And so if you were trying to add some bench depth that may not cost a bunch, that seems like a very good value signing for the New York Liberty. It gets the hat tip from me.
I think that's a big boost. I'm glad you kept some of the same energy. I'm proud of you.
Some of the same energy. It's very
good. Look, I'm assuming, and everything I've heard, we're gonna miss Marine. This can help. It's not going to be the same, but this can help. The right type of archetype, the passing, the playmaking, the shooting, the driving within the Liberty context and the movement they have. Two thumbs up from me.
42% from three from Ivana last year. 6.5 points, nearly 3 assists in 20 minutes per game before, again, she went back overseas. So she ended up not making an all-rookie team. But I felt pretty strongly like she should have made one. She would have made one had she stayed in the rotation. So that's pretty solid. Any closing? Oh, go ahead.
Well, I had two questions for you.
Okay.
Did you have any closing thoughts before I asked my two questions?
I guess since you just gave Liberty thoughts, like I'm just curious to see what the Aces do as they wait for Candace. If they do throw their names in, throw their hats in with anyone else. Like I obviously mentioned the EDD a little bit earlier. But like, just in the role player market, like I wonder what they're looking for there. If they try to do anything else with backup guard, if they're just going to wait for the draft and see who's available there. So, like, I have the antennas are up there. I want to see what else the Fever do with their cap space because there are still some quality free agents out there. Like I tweeted out earlier, hey, throw out some money for Rebecca Allen. If she's actually a flight risk for Connecticut, like that feels like a pretty good fit. So I want to see what else the Fever do. Beyond that, very hectic electrifying, fun, day one of official free agency. I'm just curious to see what news we're going to get over the weekend.
Well, now I have three questions. Okay. So if Rebecca Allen does end up in a Phoenix Mercury uniform, mm-hmm. are you moved?
Moved within what context?
Can I sell you? Can I sell you on a lineup for them? DC, Cloud, Sophie, Allen, Brittany Griner.
It seems to be a good lineup, yeah.
Okay, so you are not moved. All right, next question. No, we're good. It's fine. So, do you have any NECA thoughts? Since we don't have the news, the three teams on the list per hashtag sources, the Chicago Sky, the Seattle Storm, and the New York Liberty.
This feels like Seattle to me, if I had to guess.
Storm is coming.
This just feels like the big boom, especially in light of the trade they made to get Kia Nurse out of there. Because like without that trade, they could have just signed Scott. Like the fact that they are opening up space for two. I mean, obviously the potential exists that Seattle just gets Brook Lopez, if we're going to the Rockets example, and NECA just goes to the Liberty or goes to the Sky. But like it very much feels like it's going to be Skyler and NECA going to Seattle. No reporting, but that just feels like where that's going.
It'll be interesting to watch. And then my last question, it is February. So more egregious, the redistribution of the swag surf discussion or the Travis Kelce haircut now becoming very popular?
Wow. It's going to be the swag surf for me. As I often get the swag surf jokes, and I don't personally do it, like it is very much a hashtag staple. And so for that to lead to turn into a article, explain what is this dance that the chief fandom is doing? That's kind of odd.
Oh,
it's kind of odd.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'm filling you in. There was a hashtag article on the, they'll take the Travis Kelce hairdo. Not since Jennifer Aniston has a haircut become so popular.
Who said that?
The Times of Liberty Land.
Oh. Yeah, dog. Neck of the Seattle. You can't keep getting away.
Hey, speaking of fades, hit the horns.
Yeah, we about to fade to what? Fade to black. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you haven't already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcast, you can find us. You can follow me on Twitter at NikaiasNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Join the Dunker Spot community on Twitter. Have some fun discussions in there. Join us for our online Dunker Spot watch parties. We are having fun in there nightly at this rate, watching a bunch of hoops bouncing around, real-time analysis, top-tier vibes. We're breaking stuff down during commercial breaks. If you have end-of-game shenanigans, we get the screen up. Steve talks us through why the play did or didn't work, so we have a lot of fun there. And also, it's just a safe space for you. If you want to vent about life, your job, relationship stuff, give off some food takes, talk about an annoying thing that you saw online, you can hop on stage with us, talk it out. We have plenty of people that hop on stage, talk about things. We have lots of long-term storytelling in the chat. Appreciate the comfort that everyone has in there. So if you want to join an awesome community, watch some hoops and have some fun while doing it, come rock with the Dunker Spot crew. That link to the room should be in your podcast description, should be hyperlinked. If you have a League Pass subscription / cable subscription, you should be good to go. Just click on that link, enter your information. It's free, no shenanigans. And if it's not hyperlinked for whatever reason, copy and paste that link to your browser. Once again, it is free, no shenanigans. I think the app is available on Google and Apple, if I'm not mistaken. So if you want to download the Playback app, you can and find us. We are the Dunker Spot, so do that. But beyond that, we will catch y'all next week.
Nakai, it's a great show. Shout out Mina Kimes.